Go.
We ready?
Yes.
All right.
For reals.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm right. Totally sure.
It's really recording?
Yes, man. This is okay, all
this
going
time
in
it's really
it.
Recording? Yes. Okay. Hi, I'm Mark Wade, and you're here with 15 Minutes with Mark Wade with...
Daphne Plevin.
And Ian Bro.
Woo! And we are here today to talk about Poe.
Yes, Poe. Poe is a supernatural thriller mystery.
Right.
Set, back when Edgar Allan Poe was still writing and alive and kicking. And it's written by J. Barton Mitchell, illustrated by Dean Kotz. Covers by Declan Shelby and Jeffrey Spokes, and it is a freaking gorgeous, fun comic.
It's really a lot of fun. Like, when it came to us, this illustrates what I keep saying, when it comes to us first in the form of a screenplay, which I read and I thought, this is a great screenplay. I'm not sure it's a great comic, but there are a lot of good visuals in it. And I could sort of see in my head that you could easily break this thing into four acts, four issues of a comic, with... As luck would have it, they didn't structure it this way on purpose, but you could see where every issue would have something, some big visual set piece in it, if you broke it down that way. And so we talked about it, and it's, you know, they, again, came to the table and adapted it to comics form rather than just give it to us and say, well, it's a screenplay, make it work. So, they, in other words, they understood the language of comics. It's really good, and I had no idea that Edgar Allan Poe has a second career as an action hero. It was great.
Basically, like, picture it this way. Edgar Allan Poe writes horror stories, but where did that inspiration come from?
Exactly.
And in this case, it came a little from, you know, real-life experience, real-life horror, real-life terror. It's set right after his wife dies,
right.
And he's at a loss for words, literally, and then he finds his words by solving supernatural crime.
There's a little bit of Shakespearean love to it,
mm-hmm.
if you will. There's a little bit
but with golems and monsters and...
Right, exactly. But also with that sense of, okay, now we see where this comes from. Now we see where this poem comes from. Now we see where the inspiration for this short story was and so forth. So there's a lot of that throughout, and it's really well done. When does this come out?
It comes out July 15th.
July 15th, okay.
First issue. If you picked up the last issue of Irredeemable, you mm-hmm. saw a little six-page preview.
Yep.
You can see how good looking that book looks. Dean really went all out in researching the era. So all the clothes are accurate, all the cityscapes are accurate. It's really, really, I think you'll like it a lot.
It will do big in Baltimore.
Yes.
That's
know.
Right.
Yes.
We go to the con for...
We should be pulling other famous characters out of history to make action heroes out of.
I think Mark Twain, like in the style of Ladies
well,
Detective
Matt
Agency, would be like freaking
Fraction
fantastic.
Did that with Twain, right?
Well, he did the steampunk, Five Fists of Science.
Yeah.
Which... read it yet.
I haven't read it yet, but I...
Oh, really?
We will bring you copies.
That actually is a really
cool.
fun book.
I know it's good. I like Matt Fraction's
Mark
work.
Mark Twain,
so
Tesla.
And Tesla, and then Tesla's
Edison.
Assistant.
Cool.
Who like, has a mechanical hand.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But that brings the question, then.
Yeah.
Where is that line between, you know, biography, like writing someone's real life, and taking a little artistic license?
That's a good question, because you... Clearly, a lot of it has to do with what people know about the characters to begin with. Like, everything I know about Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, I know from that movie. And I'm, you know...
Probably for the best.
Probably for the best. And probably not the most accurate depiction, but that's what you have to... You do your research, and then you fudge the facts as best you can. But I think it has a lot also to do... I think it would be much harder to do with anybody born after the first half of the 20th century at this point. Because now we know so much about everybody. Their information is free everywhere. There's no hidden mystery. There's no, you know, your research is one Google click away. So,
but it's not just not like no mystery. It's like we know all the, I cannot pronounce this, so don't laugh, banal details of their life. It's not like you have the broad strokes of like historical figures where you've got life, death, like works and stuff like that, like in a Wikipedia entry. You've got their Twitter entries, you've got their MySpace blog posts, you see them without their makeup, so there's no desire to create a mystery around them because we know every single detail.
The thing is, we know every detail, but it doesn't necessarily... But we also know the fake details. We know the stuff that... You know, I mean, again, what's the rule about history? It's written by the winners. It's, you know, we... Look, today is a really good example. Today is... the day of Michael Jackson's funeral and memorial service. And I will go on record as saying I'm of mixed feelings because he, you know, he had some things about his life that were a little off-putting. But at the same time, here's a guy who had no real chance ever to live a real life, ever.
So, I mean, the thing is, like, during the weekend after his death, it was a completely YouTubeable life.
Yeah.
Which is how I spent, like, kind of the weekend right after his death and enjoying the music.
In the office.
And, yeah. Not,
trying to work.
Yeah. But the point, being that it's just all of... It's amazing to me that with his death, we suddenly have become a very... And this is probably not a bad thing. We've become a very amnesiatic nation. Like, these are the same news outlets that a week ago were reporting what a bizarre... Which is baloney, too. I mean, my point is that everybody's got all these different sides of them. And just because we know every fact about somebody else's life doesn't have any relation to whether or not we know the real story.
Because they're just not in any kind of context. Or it's in the worst kind of context.
It's also in the worst kind of context, and it's also information overload. We know so much that the facts obscure the truth. But when Elvis died, it was like, you know, for 2 weeks of glory, and then it became, let's roll out the sordid biographies by these guys, this guy and that guy, and that became that'll be the next wave, which will be sad. Michael, what happened?
You're mentioning, like, everyone has the same facts. It's just what story that you tell with those facts. And I find it really interesting that all these stories seem to ring true on some level.
Yeah.
It just depends on when you're hearing them. And I guess that's back to the, like, original question is, at what point do you consciously decide to just make crap up?
That's a good question.
How do you warn the audience that you're doing that?
And how upset are they going to be if you are making stuff? I'm talking about when we're talking about doing something more like Poe, because we're not going to do Michael comic anytime soon. No. So,
although there was a Captain EO comic.
There was a Captain EO comic.
Tom Yates.
That's true. So,
I think it's funny when you said the facts obscure the truth. I think sometimes you make up these stories to get to the lies to find the truth. You know, when we're talking about these... supernatural crimes that Poe is solving to get to the actual stories he wrote, you're kind of coming up with stuff, you're creating fiction to get to a real point about the person, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's what I think makes Poe, like, when you see the issue, it's about him trying to find his words.
Yeah.
It just happens to take place in a supernatural world where, you know, his words are real.
As happens. Well, that's the other thing, too, is the... Like, at what point in anyone's life does the myth become more important than the reality anyway? And I think that's the answer. I think that's ultimately the answer to your question, is there's going to be a tipping point for everybody where, you know, anybody of any fame or import as a historical character, where their...
Actual personhood matters less than the story?
Yeah, than the story. Than the stories you tell about them make...
Sounds,
you know,
like irredeemable.
It's more that that's... That's what becomes more important. That's what's more important or what do we, you know, what can we learn about Poe on a day-to-day basis that would be more important than the legend that has sprung up around him since? So at what point, this gets back to something we've talked about before, but stories have a life of their own. Stories have an existence of their own, and that reality gets bigger and bigger as you tell the stories and the legends, and therefore, at some point, that eclipses the small reality of that person's actual life. I think that, to answer your question, sort of lamely, but nonetheless, that you start to be able to take liberties at a point when the legend becomes more important than the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody sort of knows that. Like, clearly the legend of Shakespeare is greater and broader than anything we know about his life. It'll be that way about... It was that way about Elvis. It'll be that way about Michael Jackson. It'll be that way about, you know, pick somebody. You know, Heath Ledger someday. So, I don't know.
I mean, it almost feels like, you know, literature goes in cycles where at one point, you know, popular fiction is more important than nonfiction. And it's almost like, you know, where Shakespeare was telling stories about Julius Caesar that we all know aren't completely factual. That is to tell a greater thematic point, or he's trying to tell a dramatic story. It's like just playing that narrative over and over again. It's like, we know there's an understanding between the writer and the reader that what I'm about to tell you is all lies.
So what's interesting is then you get a situation where at what point does a real person become more important to culture as a fictional character? than they do as their as who they really were. Nobody could argue that Julius Caesar, as a fictional character, is more integral to the way we tell stories and the way we understand how that time period works and the way we understand about the whole Roman Empire than an actual diary of Julius Caesar would be. At this point, I would think that would be a fair assessment. Would you?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, okay. So let's think about Michael Jackson's one person who's getting close to that tipping point of the story is going to be more important than the actual. The actual person. Is there anything? Another James Dean.
James Dean is well. Okay, there's another guy whose legend is I think eclipsed the facts around his life, which is again not to.
That's a case where. Yeah. I mean, when he died young and there's only three movies, there's so much space to fill up.
This gets back to what we were talking about earlier. There's only three movies and there's no Google. There's no YouTube. There's no Twitter.
Well, and there
there's
probably weren't even videotapes. You couldn't even rewatch them. It's like, once out of the theater, they're out of the theater. It's back to your recollection of the guy.
Theaters.
But still, my point being
sorry, I forgot.
But my point being that there's that I think that in this, you know, in the day of super information, it's much harder to create It's easier to create a legend, but I think it's harder to create a story.
Or even a shared legend, because everyone has access for themselves. They could write their own legend, they could read different versions. We have access to so many different stories now, where before you're limited by, you know, is it in the theater, was a book written, were you able to buy the book in your local tiny town?
Right.
Now there's none of that barriers.
No, it continually amazes me that there are, you know, that if I want to learn something new about a historical figure, I have to go back to to people who lived in the 1910s and 1920s, because as you get closer to the end of the 20th century, then it's, you know, this is stuff that it becomes part of the gestalt that everybody knows, not because we're all so smart, but because we all spend all our time on the web anyway. So it's that is the curse of the web and its blessing as well. The blessing of the web is that everything is out there. The curse of the web is that you start every morning with a search on what is the population of Singapore because I need to know it for Irredeemable, and 2 hours later I'm reading about What's My Line episodes from 1957.
And I can't stop.
So
I would love to see a flow chart Singapore to, is it number three?
If you saw my browsing history every day, it would horrify you. How do you go from this to this to this to this? That's an interesting field of investigation. We should just take people's browser histories.
Yeah.
Oh, like great writers' browser histories see how much of it is like, you know, Twitter and how much of it is it.
Well, also just how you got from, what was that hopscotch path that you got from the thing you wanted to look up to, you know, the time you finally signed up off, you know, after you were watching old, you know, Buck Rogers episodes on Hulu. So, all right, I think that wraps it up. We're good?
Yes.
All right, 15 Minutes with Mark Wade. We will be back next week. I'm Mark Wade.
I'm Daphna.
I'm Ian.
Have a good night.